And it's Thursday, April 11, 2024, and I'm Dave Sobel. Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge. Today on the show, Goldman Sachs warns us about office space, how much are employees using generative AI without approval, cloud migrations and value, and more shadow IT, product launches from Google, OpenAI, and Gradient MSP, plus more about NIST2 and a preview of my interview from this coming weekend. I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Want to get your logo right here? Vendors, you can do so with our Vendor Patreon program. It's a simple monthly subscription and visit patreon.com/MSPradio to sign up. I can't do this show without support, and thanks again to Sales Builder for theirs. Now, I do take questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in chat. We'll have a dedicated questions section in the show with listener-submitted questions, but those comments will throw up on screen anytime. I'm really glad you can join in, as we've got a few stories to catch up from the week that I was off. So let's dive in with our first top story. I covered a lot of jobs data on the show yesterday and today, and I noted some related market conditions that I didn't want to miss. Goldman Sachs warns that office owners are running out of time as maturing debts cannot be delayed much longer. The pandemic has led to a work-from-home boom, putting significant stress on the U.S. office segment of the commercial property market. Many troubled office loans have been extended or modified, but the trend cannot continue indefinitely. The amount of outstanding commercial mortgages set to mature by the end of the year has increased significantly. And while extending maturity dates and modifying loan terms has helped mitigate defaults, funding costs are unlikely to return to pre-pandemic levels. Refinancing existing commercial mortgage loans is becoming increasingly expensive, and office property values have declined. The risks of this trend breaking have risen. And let's continue with some second-order effects. Employees are using unapproved generative AI apps to boost productivity, causing a security showdown between IT departments and workers. A survey found that 22% of employees knowingly violate company rules on the use of generative AI, with 34% using unapproved apps and tools. Workplace IT security policies designed for office networks and employer-owned devices are now facing challenges due to remote work. Security professionals express concerns about sensitive data, maliciously trained AI systems, and AI-enhanced phishing attempts. The use of publicly available generative AI tools at work is being restricted or banned by many companies, but access to AI tools is expected to widen. Now, why do we care? There's a coming change in real estate that I don't think we talk about enough. If I were an MSP today, I'd be tracking my customers' lease arrangements. Besides the potential project work around a move, there'll be discussions to be had about whether those leases are even being renewed. If you don't need an office, well, you don't need an office. We also care about the increasing shadow IT around AI. Without policies and guidance, employees are left to their own devices, which is certainly the worst situation. But a block everything strategy just won't work either. It's not realistic. And the good news is all of this is consulting and advice opportunity. Got a question or a comment? Put it on the chat if you're watching live. Certainly love to hear from you. Now, we've got a few more stories as there's been some product moves we want to focus on. Google Workspace is introducing new features and capabilities at Google Cloud Next 2024. Updates include voice input and prompting in mobile Gmail, tabs feature in Google Docs, tables features in Google Sheets, Gemini for Google Chat with conversation summarization, and automatic message translation, and AI meetings and messaging add-on for enterprise. Google also announced an AI security add-on for file protection in Google Drive. Google has integrated Mandiant security offerings into its AI platform, Gemini, to enhance its security capabilities. The new features include automated security agents that use generative AI to detect and remediate cybersecurity attacks, as well as provide faster investigations. Gemini's AI capabilities are also used to analyze code, summarize findings, and recommend actions for threat detection and prevention. The integration aims to improve the speed and effectiveness of addressing threats and neutralizing risks. OpenAI's ChatGPT Enterprise is experiencing surging demand, with over 600,000 people signed up to use it. Despite competition from other AI companies, OpenAI's COO, Brad Lightcap, believes that this year will see significant adoption of AI in enterprise. OpenAI is also working on content licensing deals and plans to open an office in Tokyo to meet global demand. Gradient MSP has launched Stat Tracker, an AI-powered SaaS product designed to help MSPs track their business and make data-driven decisions. It provides insights into product category coverage, vendor spend, resale revenue, and profitability, allowing MSPs to identify upsell opportunities and consolidate vendors for better margins. With automated product usage tracking, real-time data updates, and AI-driven data analysis, Stack Tracker offers comprehensive business insights and recommendations for improvements. Currently available to a small cohort of 100 MSPs, Gradient MSP plans to expand its availability in the future. Now, why do we care? Google versus Microsoft is not new territory. There's just new options in the feature wars. It's too early to say what killer features will drive change, but it's fun to watch. And early movers will get the ability to drive value with customers quickly. ChatGPT is the buzz, but ChatGPT Enterprise is where the metrics for business we care about are. There's clearly some adoption. And finally, I'm going to note two thoughts with regards to Stack Tracker. Gradient is now on its third product. The first fizzled, the second is Synthesize, their integration product, and now this. This is a data play. The value is in Gradient collecting the data and using it somehow. It's the somehow you want to know more about. Second, Stack Tracker looks a lot like Navistack from Channel Program. I'll broadly say, I'm not a particular fan of tools that let you visualize your stack. If you can put a package of products together in buckets like this, it's all a commodity, as each bucket is just an interchangeable part. Well, there isn't that much uniqueness there. But more importantly, remember, if you're giving your data up, and if it's free, you're the product. Now, reminder, we're taking questions, and I'm watching the chat for those comments. Certainly love to hear what you're thinking. Put it on there, and we'll throw it up on screen or answer the question a little bit later. Now, let's revisit that interview from Monday. NIS2 is the EU's new policy directive coming in October. Let's hear a part of my interview from the weekend with Eric John Fraser.
Now, we were talking before, and one of the reasons I was interested in this is that you looked at this and your interpretation is that there's actually going to be a lot of American companies that are swept up in this in ways that they may not be aware of. Give me some of the examples of the scenarios that you've been thinking about that my American listeners need to be aware of.
So what we see is we get a lot of questions asked by different companies, and they ask us like, how is your tool working for us for NIS2? And then I look at these companies and I ask them, why do you want to become compliant to NIS2? Because you don't have to become compliant. But then these companies, they quickly say to me, you know, we have these companies that we work with in Europe, and we expect that they will ask us to also comply to these NIS2 requirements. And that's why we specially designed also a supply chain portal for them to show that they have compliance to the minimal requirements that NIS2 is asking them.
And it's pretty broad, right? Because, I mean, if I'm an American company and I manufacture something and I sell a unit to a European, I'm now swept up in this, right? Like, I would have to make sure that sale and all the data, everything related to it, is involved, right? Walk me. I mean, it's that granular, and what do I have to protect?
So it's really depending on which customers do you offer your service to in Europe. And if these customers are in these critical sectors, then you can expect them to ask you that you comply to the most of the requirements that are being asked inside of the NIS2.
And there's the key insight. You've got to understand which ones, which leads us to why do we care? This set of regulations is expansive enough and includes literally any transaction that's happening with European companies. Particularly for my American listeners and those of us that think only about the US market, it's easy to think we don't necessarily have customers in Europe, but it only has to be one or two transactions that make all of the difference. And there is pretty broad definition of which sectors come into that. It includes things like waste management, as well as general services that are part of critical infrastructure. I think this is much more expansive than most Americans come to think about. And the deadline is not that far out. It's October to make sure that you're in place. This is yet another opportunity to lean into understanding your customers, asking about who your customers' customers are, and making sure you understand the expanse of their business is exactly where you can position yourself to be most valuable and help them understand these implications. Compliance as a large space is critically important. It's why I cover as many laws as I do on the show, because you never know which ones you're covered by unless you've gone deep with your customers and are tracking all of that. So that's why we care. And that interview came out on Monday, and I'd encourage you to dive further into it. Now, remember, we continue to take questions, and you can submit anytime in the chat window or submit for next week if you're watching the recording, sending to question@mspradio.com. I've got a couple more stories I want to hit on that we might have missed from the previous week. According to a study by Flexera, 58% of tech professionals and IT leaders plan to migrate more workloads to the cloud in 2024. Organizations are also optimizing their use of current cloud resources and adopting FinOps teams. Multi-cloud usage and hybrid cloud strategies are growing in sophistication, with increased application siloing, failover capabilities, and data integration between clouds. The use of public cloud generative AI services is widespread. Challenges in cloud migration include understanding app dependencies and assessing on-premises versus cloud costs. European companies are hindering their cloud computing ambitions by focusing too much on IT improvements rather than transforming their business operations, according to a study by McKinsey. While 95% of European companies claim to capture value from the cloud, few are realizing significant financial benefits. The study found that the majority of value remains in isolated pockets and at subscale. European companies also tend to measure cloud impact primarily in terms of IT improvements and cost savings, rather than non-IT outcomes and revenue generation. McKinsey suggests that European firms should prioritize higher value cloud use cases and shift their focus toward revenue uplift and cost savings in business operations. The study also highlights the pace of cloud adoption in Europe is slow, with less than a third of enterprises having 50% of their workloads on the cloud. McKinsey recommends that companies focus on business value, utilize small cross-functional teams, build sufficient foundations for effective cloud operations. Now, why do we care? Well, it's all about more cloud. I don't want listeners to get hung up on the fact that this data and study focused on Europe. We know the US looks very similar, and this is very much a widespread problem. The key here, the big insight, is revenue generation. It's the holy grail of adoption, and where the best focus should be. It's hard, no doubt about that, but it's also not common. A unique value prospect is not your people. It's not your customer service. It's not your technical stack. It's the ability to use technology to drive revenue outcomes. Full stop. Now, make sure to put questions in the chat. This is our coming into our question section, and I do love taking them. Remember, bring your questions live, and you'll get a live response. This is so much fun, and if you don't want to do it and you don't want to show up live, you can always submit them ahead of time. Q&A gives you a chance to get involved with the show. So let's take our first submitted question, came in via email.
What is your take on Mac management within the MSP community?
Oh, it's so interesting to dive into this. Now, I've got huge bias in that I am a Mac user myself. One of the things that I looked into when thinking about this particular question was the strategies that successful organizations take on. Too often, Mac is added as a quick add-on with a hope that an existing team can handle it. And what I found was those organizations that were claiming the best success with implementation had dedicated teams and dedicated process for handling Mac adoption. Remember, 10% of the market broadly is Mac. And what you'll find when you dig into it is this often is very high value people within the organization. The next time you go look at some of your customers, look around the rooms and find out which people are the ones that have Macs. They tend to be executives or senior creatives or people in specialized roles. And that translates into high value and high billable rates. Note that not all things do not have to be the same. You can customize your offering as it makes sense to your customer base. I've seen a number of MSPs that say they just do it across the board. But the really savvy ones do pricing per user. So they've got a strategy specifically for handling those Mac users. Really appreciate all of these questions that come in when they come in ahead of time. We do make sure to do the research. But if you want to hear me answer it live, show up and answer anytime. If you've got one while you're here, put it in the chat and we will take it right away. But in lieu of that, I want to thank you all for all your questions, and I want to give you a preview of coming this weekend's interview. Now, this weekend, we'll be releasing an interview with John Gillam, who's the founder of Originality.ai. As we think about our policies for AI, how do we build them? What are the parameters? And maybe we should talk to somebody who's been thinking about the detection of AI, and he's got some insights for us. Let's hear part of that upcoming interview.
You brought up a really interesting question when we were talking beforehand, and I wanted to bring it to my listeners. What inspired you to focus on the intersection of AI and its potential physical impact on people?
Yeah, so with what Originality.ai does is it is a AI content detector that identifies if content has been human created or AI created, and it. Important for a lot of companies to truly understand where their content was AI created, because there's a whole bunch of risks that come with that, or whether it was human created. And what inspired us was we had run our own content marketing company. We had then eventually sold that content marketing company. And we had seen this sort of intersection of where are humans in the loop, where are AIs in the loop. And that was what had inspired us to try and build our own detector that was able to understand when humans were creating content or AIs were creating content.
And how do you link this to physical harm? Like what's the physical harm angle for how an AI can actually hurt people?
There was a situation where AIs had written books, and those books had been published on Amazon. And then we were involved in some research with The Guardian, and they had been recommending that the book that was published on Amazon had been recommending that if foragers, so people that were picking mushrooms, were unsure if a mushroom was safe, they should just taste it a little bit to check. And so sort of that ability of AI to hallucinate and then to not end up with any human in the loop is a really interesting risk trajectory that a lot of companies are exposed to if they aren't having their policy tight around the use of AI.
So what are you recommending then as the approach? Well, let's start with the companies that are thinking about using it. Like, how do they implement correctly to make sure that they're avoiding these kinds of harm for their own customers?
Yeah. So every company is going to have different risk profiles. Some need to be concerned about the impact of Matt producing AI content and then getting slapped by Google. That's one of the risks they need to manage. Others are concerned about reputational harm, such as publishing hallucinated news stories, like what a lot of companies have been caught doing. And some are there's legal harm where if they're working for a law firm and they need to make certain their lawyers are not using generative AI to shortcut the work. And so it's a nuanced approach, as I think probably your audience is familiar with, that the answer to most things is, well, it depends. What's the right solution for me? Well, it depends. It's pretty commonly the answer and the right answer. And I think it's the same situation here where companies need to have an understanding on where content is being produced in their organization and then understand the risk associated with if it's marketing content, if it's legal content, if it's contractual content, wherever writers are typing in words, if there's an incentive for them to use AI and that produces a risk for the company, they need to be understanding it. And then our tools there to help them help them truly understand how much AI has potentially polluted parts of their work that they wish it wasn't involved in.
John's really insightful, where on the way that AI can be used to do detection has a lot of thoughts on the right places and the right scenarios, and walks through the differences in, say, their tools versus some of the stuff that was created by OpenAI. I really encourage you to listen to this interview as it comes out this weekend, because you're going to get a lot of insights in the way policies link to these kinds of detection tools. And a reminder for listeners, my Patreon supporters already have this interview, and you can get all my interview content early as a supporter. If you visit patreon.com/MSPradio, you can get access right now to that video. Now, I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support made this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Vendors, you too can get your name mentioned on the live show. It's a simple monthly subscription. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio to learn more. And listeners, you also can support the show. The first thing you can do, like, share, and follow on your favorite platforms. It really helps. It makes a massive difference and goes a very long way to keeping this show on the air. So you can support directly on Patreon with our Give What You Want model. You set what you think the content is worth and continue to support the show. And if you have a question and you're listening to the recording, send it in at question@MSPradio.com. You too can have an AI voice if you submit one in via email. Now, next week, this live show is on Wednesday. So catch us Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and LinkedIn. Thanks for joining me for the Business of Tech Lounge. And I look forward to seeing and talking with you next time.